They were high school sweethearts that got married and had two kids. It's the Brunettes. From a new location, they tweet all day, but that's okay. They're the Brunettes. She is a journalist. He is a wonk.
Wonk, wonk, wonk.
They talk about the news or whatever they want. In the fight for justice, they're on your side. You can't deny it's the Brunettes.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to our low-effort, low-quality podcast. This is Liz Brunig. This is my husband, Matt.
Hi, Lara.
Oh, wow. Okay. Have we been here since the Super Bowl happened?
Let's see. 5 days ago, we did our last one. So, okay. Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Well, I just wanted to register that had happened.
Mm-hmm. We're back. Honestly. Two episodes in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. We're killing it.
Come on.
We're killing it.
Come on. Come on. Oh, God. Yeah. What a mistake and what a train wreck everything in my life is, this podcast included.
Ah, no. We're back. We're back. 5 days. Not even a week. You know? Thanks for hanging with us.
Yeah. Okay.
You know?
Yeah, the people are saying it's too much content.
Nah, now they're like way too much. Last one was 1:22 as well.
Yeah.
So that was already, what's 22 divided by 60? 36% more content than they're supposed to get.
Yeah, so people already, they've been saying that's too much. The content's too good. There's too much of it.
They are, yeah.
Complaining about winning.
Did you see Christopher Paul III at the NBA All-Star Game Skill Challenge?
Yeah, of course. I was watching that.
Well, it was all over the internet. Okay.
Yeah, I'm afraid I missed it.
Do you know, the Chris Paul bit, right?
You like him because he's just some kind of difficult character. He's sort of wily methods of winning.
Yes, yes, yes. So they had, do you know the All-Star Game? You understand the premise there?
It's like all the best players from all the teams.
Right, right. And then it's a whole weekend. They classically, you take the best players from one part of the league. In this case, it would be like West versus East. And then, the best players from the other part of the league. And then they compete, with each other. And it's kind of degraded, over time. It's not really, West and East is sort of arbitrary distinctions. Don't really mean anything. Back in the day, with baseball, I guess there was something because they had the National League and the American League and they never played each other,
Okay.
Until the World Series. So then it kind of would be interesting, I guess, to be like, well, these guys, but I don't know. Anyways, they add a bunch of like ancillary stuff to it. There's a celebrity game. There's a 3-point contest. There's a dunk contest. There's all these other attractions. Mm-hmm. Okay. And one of them is the skills contest, which is probably the dumbest one, just kind of not very entertaining.
Yeah.
Because they have them do like a bounce pass through a hoop.
Yeah.
Which anyone could do that. Like I could do the bounce pass part of the skills challenge.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
I don't know that anyone ever misses the bounce pass. And then they do a chest pass. Again, I think anyone over the age of 12 who's played any basketball could do it. And then they have them do the shooting.
Yeah.
And they shoot from these racks and there's three balls and you shoot from these, I think there's four different locations or maybe three different locations and you shoot until you make it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to move on to the next one, right?
Yeah.
Unless you miss all three balls at that location, then you also get to move on to the next one. So the idea is like everyone who shoots, like you're going to get an advantage.
Yeah.
I guess to take a step back, you win the skills challenge if you get through all the obstacles the fastest.
Yeah.
So you post this shortest time.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is if you're a good shooter, you'll hit that first shot and then you'll move on to the next spot, hit the next shot, and then move on to the next spot and hit the next shot. And so then you'll get a faster time.
Okay.
Whereas if you're not doing well at the shooting, you may not make it till your second ball.
Okay.
Or your third ball. or you might even miss all three balls.
Yeah.
And now you know, and so it's slower. It slows you down, right? And you're supposed to lower time. So that's kind of how the mechanic of the game works, right? What Chris Paul realized was when you get to the shooting part, the amount of time it takes to kind of square up your shot and shoot it is not worth it.
Yeah.
It would be better just to get to that rack and just quickly heave all three balls just sort of in the vicinity of the basket and then move on to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you miss all three, you get to move on anyways. So you can quickly miss all three faster than someone can actually make a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you factor in the fact that people don't shoot 100%.
Okay.
So they, him and Victor Wembanyama, his teammate, they dominate the skills challenge. They post like the best time ever with the strategy of hitting the bounce pass, hitting the chest pass, and then not even trying to make the bucket.
Okay.
And then shooting the layup. So just fucking just throwing them. Just fully in. And they win.
All
right. They post the best time and everyone's very upset. And then they disqualified them.
Why?
Good question. And Chris Paul was like, I actually asked people before the thing even began whether I could do this. And they said I could. So. What do you think about that?
I think that, you know, they should have been straight with him from the beginning, that it wasn't allowed.
Let me play that. I guess I should just play the audio of it. It is so great. It is right up my alley. Shit I like to see. Here we go. Someone says, Chris Paul turning the All-Star game into a courtroom.
Yeah, that's something you would do. I see how you see a certain kinship in this individual.
Oh, I know what I need to do to get this shit. I need to go to my own account since I tweeted it. I'm trying to find a video of them talking about it. Here we go.
All
right, watch this. So watch this. You could get a sense. All right, make it in.
Even me.
Just fucking not trying.
Yeah.
That's Victor Wembanyama, who has been told by Chris Paul to do this, right? So we shoot over the windmill. Just don't even try.
Unique strategy. It's all about the belt, the passes. They're not even worried about this. It has Chris Paul's fingerprints all over it.
It does have us, yeah. They all know.
See, there's some thinking that went into this.
Watch him. Watch how little he tries.
No,
he's supposed to be trying to make it.
Wait a minute. The crowd is unsettled.
Yes.
The rules are being shoved to the very brink.
That's right. They have manipulated the rules.
They indeed have.
And look at the time. Look at the time.
It's all about the bounce.
Oh, there's some booze.
A lot of booze.
They both got the thumbs down.
That's how you skirt it. They weren't worried about any of the shots.
Look how happy he is.
Right, yeah. Because you only get three anyway. So if you get rid of those.
I love it.
It's going to be so frustrating.
Oh, I love it.
Just someone who enjoys watching the sport to see them play good basketball, you know?
I want to see the best stars in the skills challenge. And he's just like, actually, the optimal strategy, we're trying to optimize within the rules. You just kind of pluck the ball and then that's it. That's how you win.
Very much not in the spirit of things.
What rule did he break? You know what I'm saying?
This is, you have a collection of people like this that you like.
I mean, I get why people, but like, especially in this context, how is this not hilarious? How is this not great?
I mean, it is very funny.
He's having a great time.
It's funny.
It's funny that people boo him. Like the whole thing is great.
I think a lot of people, when they're booing at sports figures, are actually quite emotionally affected by what they're seeing and would find your characterization.
At the All-Star game, though.
I think sports nonsense like this is funny because at least I understand it. I don't care about sports generally. But my understanding is that some people take sports very seriously.
Look, if all the sports all the time was Chris Paul hijinks, I would be the only one having fun. But if it's only occasionally Chris Paul hijinks, I feel like we can all enjoy that. We can all have a good time occasionally when a Chris Paul character gets into sports and it's just like fucking nitpicking rules and stuff.
Yeah.
That's fun. Like when he got that technical foul and the guy's jersey was untucked.
Yeah.
That's so good. You don't see that very often.
So frustrating.
All right. Well, I did play that audio, so I'll play the only other audio I have today. This is about Craig Jones of MMA fame.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's talking about what it takes to become a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu world champion. Okay. And what he looks for, I guess, is maybe he's a coach. I actually don't know too much. What he looks for when he's looking to try to find, and what he thinks other people should be looking for, as far as like raw talent goes,
yeah,
to develop them into a Jiu-Jitsu world champion.
If you have the right mix, I call it the Goldilocks zone. If you have the right mix of autism and steroids, you are guaranteed, 100% guaranteed to become a world champion. And that's the thing, is that people are focusing on steroids, but really, as a world-class coach, you really want to attract people with autism, because you can give anyone steroids. Despite our best efforts, we've yet to give anyone autism.
Okay. All right. Okay. Just madness going on out there.
I hope Chris Paul announces his autistic one day. That would be really important for the community.
You think that would be considered a big score?
Yeah. Oh, if Chris Paul was on our team, hell yeah.
I have to say that it seems like, and this is just me, this is, you know, I don't know what I'm talking about here. I'm shooting from the hip. This is your community. But it seems like you've gotten a lot of like low quality recruits in the last 5-10 years.
Yeah.
Used to, it meant something to be autistic. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I would be like, my husband will go to the party and not say anything to anyone the whole night. That's real autism.
It's been watered down.
It's been, yeah, I feel like that's the case. Yeah.
But I might be responsible for that too, you know?
You think so?
Yeah. I'm fine. I'm not really autistic.
Yeah, I guess your position is you cured your autism.
I cured it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you're autistic enough, you can cure it.
You can cure autism with even more autism.
Absolutely.
The hair of the dog that bit you. Situation. 100%.
Yeah. Because if you're that fucking detail oriented, you know what I mean? Figure it out.
Yeah. You just put your mind to solving the problem of being autistic.
And exactly.
Just self,
yeah.
Self cures.
Yeah. It's just like anything else. And I was like, you know what? I bet I could make a comprehensive database of NLRB documents.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've never done, I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Figure it out. I don't know exactly how, but I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah. So you set out to do the same thing with curing your autism.
Mm-hmm. I recently added circuit court decisions to my NLRB research database. You can check it out right now on NLRBresearch.com.
Not beating the autistic allegations.
That was a tough one. That was a tough one, adding those. That took a while.
Yeah, you've been in the coding zone recently.
The problem is, you have to scrape it from this website, Justia, that does not want to be scraped, one. So you got to like spoof all the headers and shit to get around that. And then it's like, there's shit. Some of it's in plain text. Some of it's in PDF. Oh, my fucking God. This is a nightmare. But I got it done. It does now take like 45 minutes for the database to regenerate every okay. night. Well, whatever. I run it in the background. Kranja, who gives a fuck?
Yeah, exactly.
It gets the job done, you know? Anyways, Elon Musk is, he's the leader of the country.
Yeah, Elon Musk is in charge. It sucks.
Just really fucking bizarre.
So
I feel like
stupid,
we're
stupid and lame.
Normalizing into that.
It's
but
fucking pathetic. It's the age of nihilism. Like, who fucking cares? The person who's in charge of the world is this fish belly looking freak. Nobody elected him. He's just, God, it's just the worst situation, honestly.
The divergence of people's impression of Musk is really stark.
Yeah.
Like, there are people on the internet who, they see Musk doing all of his things, and they seem to be completely blown away by it.
Yeah.
Like, utterly impressed. And then a whole other segment that just sees, like, a bumbling moron who's kind of like out of control in a, not in a, why doesn't someone rein him in, but like in his own way, like he can't, he in a sort of like drug addict kind of way.
Yeah.
He tweets 80 times a day.
Yeah. God.
Like, what is he doing? We got, they're making a lot of mistakes. one thing I think is funny on this front is there are people on there who think he's doing like magic computer shit to the government.
Yeah.
And it's like, and I don't mean to say, cause I'm not the most sophisticated computer guy. There's people way better at coding and whatever than me, but like enough to be like, okay, so he's just like, he's getting to the server. Okay, they gave him access to the database. And so he's, you know, messing around. Like, I can fully conceptualize how you would do all the things that are being done.
Yes.
It's just like, it's not like a technical challenge. It's like, you don't need 20-year-old, like, racist autists to, like, do it. Who are, like, some, you don't need that.
Yeah.
Like, anyone who's ever used a fucking, you know, I mean, what you really need are like COBOL programmers and like people who do like ancient bullshit, because that's what a lot of the government runs on. But anyways, I saw that come across today where they were like, man, what Musk is doing today with his algorithms to find frauds. Like, there's no algorithm.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, they're control effing these databases for random shit. That's how they managed to stumble into the $50 million for contraceptive, for like condoms in Gaza, which was not actually Gaza. Mm. They just, and the one I wanted to highlight today, which I saw come across, was they canceled a program that was called, let me get this exactly correct, because I think it's so great as an indicator of like what a bumbling, you know, moron he is, and in terms of what they're doing, you know, like just fully ass stumbling into everything. Okay, so there was a program in the Department of Education that was called the U.S. Department of Education's Evaluation of Transition Support for Youth with Disabilities.
Yeah,
and they canceled this. And so we get this email from these school districts that are notifying parents that their disabled children who are enrolled in this program are going to be kicked out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And what the program does is it helps disabled high schoolers like transition into being an adult.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Like, they have unique difficulties.
Yeah.
I remember watching a documentary about this with like, it was like autistic kids and Down syndrome kids.
Yeah.
And they're trying to help them like get a job, you know, because like, what do? Like, they have, you know, it's not like any other high schooler where they either go off to college or just start filling out applications. Like, you got to kind of be very hands on.
Yeah.
And trying to figure. So that was what this was for. And he canceled it. And the speculation, which I think is probably true, is they just picked up transition.
Yeah.
And decided that was a trans thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I would guess that's what happened.
It's kind, it would be funny if it, if in this case, it, most of the shit is a little funny because it's so ridiculous, and you're, I don't know, for, you're, I don't know, for some reason I'm able to separate from the carnage of it. But in my mind now, thinking about like a parent of like a kid with Down syndrome who's in this program, he's trying to get them into some kind of like sheltered work doing commercial laundry or something.
Yeah.
And they're just like, nope, Musk said we can't. Musk, what? This is congressionally authorized spending. Who's, you can't just cancel, and he's not even elected. What's going on here? That's pretty brutal.
Mm-hmm.
It seems pretty bad. I would like disabled children to get a little assistance in their transition to adulthood. And I don't know that Musk should be in the position to just unilaterally say no.
Do you think, I mean, there's so much that's, you know, it's a comedic way for America's liberal democratic experiment to conclude. It's very funny. Very darkly comedic. But the part that surprises me, and I guess I want your read on whether this is the most surprising part or just an epiphenomenon, is the open concubinage that Musk is now doing from his purchase. I mean, he's Genghis Khan, man. He's just like, bring me the women, I'll knock them up.
That's where I wanted to go, yeah. And then I got sidetracked onto this. So we get the announcement from Ashley St. Clair.
Not a stripper.
No, but, you know, adjacent.
Yeah.
She's
like,
what you might call a tweener. In the right-wing media space, I'm just describing descriptively how it works. And I disapprove of this.
It's always good when you have to set it up that way.
I disapprove of this.
Just to be clear, for future audio clip purposes, what is being described is rejected and condemned by the show.
Disapprove of this, but it is the case. On the right, if you want to be a female personality, like talking head type person, on the right, you kind of have two grooves here, maybe three, depending. But you can either are like a Fox News babe type setup, in which case it kind of doesn't matter. Like, you say a lot of dumb shit and it's whatever because no one really cares. That's not the thing, right?
Yeah.
You're the bikini model at the car show. That's the bit.
Yeah.
I disapprove of this,
mm-hmm.
but that's the reality.
Yeah.
There is another slot for a kind of like Ann Coulter type figure who's just kind of an argumentative like beast.
Yeah.
You know, or at least attempts to be that.
Yeah.
You know, and those people can be somewhat less attractive.
Yeah.
Again, just describing the reality of how it works.
I thought
on the
Olan
right.
was hot back in her day, though.
Maybe back in the day. I don't know. But, you know, we see this. There are examples of this, you know. And it's sort of unclear. That's why I call her a tweener. It's sort of unclear where she's trying to go here.
Yeah.
She doesn't seem to be bright enough to, you know, compensate for or hot enough.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so
the lines just aren't intersecting in the right place.
Yeah, it's sort of mysterious.
Yeah,
what's going on here? But you know, she made it work. Doing sort of like she wrote an anti-woke children's book.
All right.
You know, that sort of shit.
an anti-woke children's book. Instead of calling your black classmates black, you should instead say the N-word.
It is, the book is Elephants Are Not Birds.
Oh, okay.
So, I think you can imagine where we're going here.
Yeah. Oh, boy. That was just be such a confusing thing to have someone read you as a child.
Imagine presenting this to Claire, our five-year-old, and just being like, elephants are not birds. They're trying to piece it together. She's like, I knew they weren't birds.
Yeah. You know, some elephants try to make it seem like they're birds. And
she's
they
like,
say,
no, they
she's
don't.
Like, what? Elephants are big.
It's a children's book written for adults.
Yes. Yeah.
About.
It's a children's book to make other adults angry.
it's so fucking weird. You're trying to. Yeah, that's great.
That's dark shit.
A new conservative publishing house wants to get the wokeness out of bedtime.
like you have no control as a parent over what you're reading.
Those are the only books.
Yeah, they're all
you
out
can't
there
buy any
with
children's
damn
books
transgender books
that aren't just about woke. and then at best you could get a Ruth Bader Ginsburg book, and that's it. That's all you can read.
Yeah, that's it. That's all you've got now.
You literally, there's an infinite backlog of children's books, and the thing is, they never get old.
That's the thing. You can each new child discovers each new book for themselves. So we can just keep using the same children.
Yeah, books. Like other books, any book written over 100 years ago is unreadable.
Yeah, I guess
for adults. I'm not sure. I don't know what's going on. You're living on a farm. I don't fucking know. That's weird to me.
I sort of disagree with
that. I can't relate to that at all.
You can understand shit written in like the medieval era.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, okay.
But
sorry, I'm stoned.
It is sort of more unrelatable, I guess, if that's your game. But the children's books are all fantastical to begin with. So they live outside of time.
Yeah.
She announced.
Just reading.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Being obsessed with children's books and what is read by children is 100% correlated with being insane for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
I was just reading the other day, it was like a long essay in New York Magazine where there was a protracted meditation on the meaning of where the wild things are.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like against Pamela Paul's reading of where the wild things are.
Well, that famous reading of Pamela Paul.
in a longer essay that was like, you know, get her ass with respect to Pamela Paul, but I think the longer essay was wrong about the kind of thing liberalism is.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of mistaken in its main point. Anyway, I was like, good God, why are we doing this kind of argument through a reading of Where the Wild Things Are? This is a sign of something sick in our culture, something decadent. I'm still there, basically.
So about the concubinage.
Yeah.
Ashley St. Clair put a note out on Twitter.
Yeah.
Which she tweeted with the caption, Alea Lacta Est.
Okay, sounds like Latin.
Which is the die is cast.
Oh, cool,
so,
yeah.
Pretty famous, epic.
Yeah, Julius Caesar. God, every fucking person involved in this is a loser.
Yeah, they're all fucking lame as shit.
God almighty. I throw my glove down. What?
Good day, sir.
Yeah, I said good day.
5 months ago, I welcomed a new... it's a weird time to announce.
Yeah.
5 months ago, I welcomed a new baby into the world. Elon Musk is the father. I have not previously disclosed this to protect our child's privacy and safety, but in recent days it has become clear that tabloid media intends to do so, regardless of the harm it will cause. I intend to allow our child to grow in a normal and safe environment. For that reason, I ask that the media honor our child's privacy and refrain from invasive reporting. And on the bottom, you can email Brian Glicklick of Digital Strategy LTD. That set off quite a firestorm.
Yeah, but she didn't just say that, right?
Well, so subsequently, the next day, Brian Gicklick.
Like the noise the cat makes when he sees a bird through the window.
He put out another note that was written in the same font and ends with three hashtags.
Yeah, that's how you know you're at the end of the dock. You can put a 30 in there, too.
That's how you know he's a pro. I'm going to hire him for my Digital Strategy Limited. You can also, he's on the click.eth if you want to pay him some Ethernet.
Okay.
Some Ethereum. If you want to pay him in Ethereum, you can go to click.eth. Oh, God. I'm sorry, if I'm looking for a comms professional to deal with my my child's father who also runs the country and all this kind of shit.
Yeah.
And he's like, in his Twitter profile, he has his Ethereum wallet.
Yeah.
I'm like, nah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, so his note says, Ashley and Elon have been privately working towards the creation of an agreement about raising their child for some time. That's wild. It is disappointing that a tabloid reporter who repeatedly ambushed Ashley and her family made it impossible to complete that process confidentially. We are waiting for Elon to publicly acknowledge his parental role with Ashley to end unwarranted speculation, and Ashley trusts that Elon intends to finish their agreement quickly in the best interests of the well-being and security of the child they share.
Wow, so they're trying to figure out an agreement. Custody agreement?
You know that agreement you sign when you have a child with someone?
Yeah, oh, okay. So
the classic child agreement.
That contract we all know and love. So this is just I think this verifies what was probably already obvious, but this is just a thing he does. He seeds various baby mamas and puts them on his payroll. And this is part of his, like, eugenics project or pronatalist project, or maybe the two are the same in his case.
In his mind, is mating with Ashley St. Clair, is that improving the plight of the gene pool, or... I mean, of all the, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. that's a 90th percentile lady right there.
Yeah.
And, like, by what standard exactly?
Well, she's right-wing, Matt, so you know she's intelligent.
Okay. Obviously, she's very smart. She's got herself in quite a life predicament.
Yeah. She, you know, if I were...
In a sense.
Okay.
In a sense, his project is self-defeating, because if a woman would go along with it, that's already dysgenic.
Yeah.
There's already a dysgenic thing being introduced there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's got to go the route of those, like, doctors who sneak in their sperm to, like, for donor kind of things. Because if anyone is going, like, Grimes is a fucking nutcase.
Yeah.
Just batty out of her mind.
Yeah.
You know? Ashley St. Clair is not coming off too great either. He's got a few, like, just random, like, early ones that seem fine.
Yeah.
But his later picks when he was more in the eugenic phase just don't really seem all that impressive.
Amber Heard is one of his baby mamas.
Also crazy.
Also just...
just bad shit.
Insane, yeah.
Milo Yiannopoulos, who's back on the scene, sort of.
He's like a spox for somebody, and he's also Catholic, and he cured being gay, I guess.
Yeah, he's doing bits. You know, he got canceled back in the day for endorsing pedophilia of a sort.
Yeah, he was like, it's fine if you're in English school systems and you want to do some...
He was like, in the gay male community, that's one of the ways that teenage boys learn to, that's like a normal way to be introduced into gay life.
Okay.
People are like, you can't have sex with teenage boys if you're an adult. They canceled him for that. That was, you know, woke and whatnot.
Yeah, that was, now that woke is over, he can come back and just proudly be a pederast.
He tweeted a picture of a screen of a tweet.
Okay. All right.
That says, it's sort of unclear. I think the first one is hers. Yes. From 2020, she tweeted, "I need to get Elon Musk's attention for a marriage proposal. Please, Greg." And Greg says, "He's got a kid with a woman already. Seems unlikely to work out." And then she said, "Well, he actually has 7 kids and goes through women pretty fast." So Milo tweeted this and says, "Ashley St. Clair plotted for half a decade to ensnare Elon Musk." And then Musk replied with, "Whoa."
Okay.
All happening right now around the birth of a child who's made in God's image, actually.
Yeah, this must be an interesting moment to be one of Trump's pro-life adherents.
Well, we get that from Mr. Wilcox.
Yeah.
Brad, well, great. Friend of the show, really.
Yeah, Brad's a real one. He goes back. I honestly like the guy.
He's a fucking snake, but he...
Oh, come on.
He endears himself well. That's kind of his whole bit, but I don't fall for it.
He was originally, the OG Brad Wilcox is an anti-porn guy.
he's a whatever the fuck conservatives will pay him to do guy.
All right.
He was for a while. He was like, he would write these goofy ass studies about how gay marriage is bad for kids and like just weird shit.
Telling you, when he got into the game, it was about porn. And he's a very old school guy in that.
Maybe at some point he had some scruples, but I ain't seen him lately. Here's as far as he would go, right? Is this not an easy layup here? This man now has 13 children by 4 women.
Mm-hmm.
I'm old enough to remember where that was a deadbeat dad kind of the thing that unified conservative disgust with the cultural depravity.
Yeah.
Especially in certain sectors of society, mm-hmm. you know? And here it is just right out and open. What he has to muster to that is happy that Musk loves kids, unhappy that he doesn't realize how much marriage matters for them.
Okay, well.
Does he love kids?
Yeah, I honestly can't figure out what he's doing. Is this isn't a sex thing, right? There are just more expedient ways to have a lot of sex.
No, it's not a sex thing. But he's just not wanting to raise kids. Like,
well,
get this. So what do we mean by love
either.
Kids?
Yeah.
He's not.
Well, he's making a show of bringing his kid with him everywhere.
That's
the one
bullshit,
that has
though.
A random password generator name.
That is bullshit, though.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, it's obviously bullshit.
He's not taking care of. He's tweeting too much.
Yeah.
I had to stop tweeting because I had children.
Yeah.
I only get to tweet like a few times a day now.
Yeah.
And he ostensibly has 5 companies and is running the whole government. You know, like, he's not doing anything with his kids other than these sort of like photo ops.
Yeah, but you know, the photo op is powerful, and the right wing has been, I'm just telling you, I'm from observing them. They're very head up and excited.
They're fucking stupid as hell.
Yeah, I mean, everyone, that's clear, Matt. They're fucking stuck with Trump and Elon Musk in charge, so obviously they didn't get here through genius.
I'm like, oh yeah, I saw them today because Trump was at the Daytona 500,
mm-hmm.
and his grand, they did like a interview with him, and his granddaughter was there. And I guess that was another one of the, like, that's their bit now.
Yeah.
Is it's like, this is our sop. We kind of have kids. It's like, you think Trump deals with his granddaughter? You know?
Yeah.
Deal with his own kids. But yeah, okay. Yeah, that's their thing. So some of them are just eating it up. Woo, there's a kid in the Oval Office. Woo! Which kid is the, oh, wait, which mother is the one that, okay. Which concubine is that one? Okay.
Yeah.
Yay!
Is your mother a favored concubine, or is she one of the under concubines?
This will send
a poor girl from a country village.
This will send great messages into the society, and we will get back to a conservative, pronatalist society focused on family. This will make it happen.
Just become a very highly patriarchal society with like one warlord father and then dozens of women who are kind of raising each other's kids.
Yeah, and we'll just slaughter half the men.
Yeah, we send the boys out to wander the plains. Good luck. The Mormons do this.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Polygamy, right? Isn't that what they call that?
Yep.
Yeah, it's not exactly the Christian conservative perspective on the well-ordered society, I wouldn't say, but
yeah,
you know, at least he has kids, so that's a thing, even if he doesn't take care of them at all. But anyways,
he's a father, not a dad.
Yeah, I'm not the stepdad. I'm the
dad who stepped
dad
up.
Who stepped up.
You should get one of those shirts.
Yeah, that's also true.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
You're also not the stepdad.
That is literally true in my case. The other people who wear it are not accurate, strictly speaking.
It's not true in their case.
But yeah, you know, you just wonder, is something going to break at some point?
Yes.
I mean, one, this can't go on forever. Like, the heated, like, there's this, it's going to exhaust. Obviously, there's already been plenty of court decisions saying that, no, actually, you can't just have this South African billionaire become the president and unilaterally decide what every agency does.
Yeah.
That's not actually the way the system is set up. Eventually, you think that's going to run its course, maybe. I don't know. Are they just going to disobey? I mean, they've definitely been, Vance especially, has definitely been tweeting stuff about how, you know, he wants to disregard the court rulings and stuff, which is also real sad. Imagine being that dude. What a great arc for him.
Yeah.
From Hillbilly Elegy to just like, yes, the richest Hillbilly Elegy to, you know, like white working class, like populist, like nativism shit to whatever Elon Musk wants. Whatever. Yeah. And if the courts would just break the whole system for this guy, this fucking freak.
Yeah. Fuck, man. I can't believe we all have to do what Elon Musk says now. I mean, the one thing that they can't take from you, and I guess this is heartening on some level, is they can't actually buy or force coolness.
They think they're cool, right? They have a whole story about how libs are uncool because they're these sheep, and they're, well, like they say, the NPCs, right? They just kind of go through the world and they're in this like haze, and it's only these intrepid conservatives who are like actors in the world, because everyone else is just kind of programmed and they're just going with the flow. And
yeah.
And it's like within their own communities, this sort of reminds me of like the anarchists or whatever, right? Where that I knew growing up, where they were lame as fuck people.
Yeah.
But they, within their own world, they were like the only cool people.
Yeah.
Like they thought everyone else was real lame.
Yeah.
And like that seems like kind of where the conservatives are as well.
Yeah, but I'm just telling you, I have an objective view of what's cool.
They don't seem to exude the usual indicia of coolness. I don't think you see Elon Musk standing with his little hand thing doing weird autistic shit in the Oval Office. Yeah. You're like, yeah, that's that classic cool right there.
Yeah, love that. Love a guy who just desperately wants approval and attention. I mean, you know, who among us? But is that what cool people are like, or is that what kind of needy and lame people are like?
It's so needy and lame. Like I saw this clip that went on Twitter a while, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, where he was on the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
Which is like the most submental show ever.
Yeah, I've never watched it.
A show. It is a show for dumb people who think they're smart. Mm. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of, oh, it's one of like a physics nerd or whatever. It's like, but the show is fucking stupid. You know what I mean? Like nothing comes out of it that's that would be legit to an actual nerd or whatever.
Just like zingers about the laws of thermodynamics.
Yeah, like it's just who. He did a cameo on it where he was like cleaning dishes or whatever. Okay. And it's like, okay, so he identifies the Big Bang Theory and he's like, that's cool. And it's like this, oh, it's so Reddit.
Yeah, it's very Reddit.
And it's like, guys, I don't, but within the Reddit world,
yeah,
like Epic Bacon and Narwhal and stuff, like they have their own legitimizing system.
Yeah.
And they all are like Elon Musk, like, so he's riding the wave of this subculture of losers.
Yeah.
And but they don't they think everyone else is a loser.
Yeah.
And it's remarkable. But we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shall we turn to questions?
Sure.
Okay. Just picking random questions.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, okay. I haven't really looked at any of them.
All right, well.
I'm going to go in reverse chrono. No, I'm going to go in chrono this time, because the people who come in early, they end up getting squeezed out because their stuff's at the bottom, you know? I've been more interested in hearing what Matt has to say about all this Elon/Trump stuff more than any other public figure. Well, you just got it. Someone talking about farts.
Great.
Yeah, someone talking about the ADA embedding models from GPT. I know about it. I know about it, famo. Oh shit, I'm on the wrong thread. That's the problem. Like, these aren't questions. What do I do about this? How do you deal with friends / family not liking or approving your significant other? Approving of your significant other? That's a good question for Liz.
How do I deal with it? Just like, don't care. Ignore it. You know, did they live with you? Are you living with your family? Does, like, in that case, it's a big problem because you're all living together and you're having day-to-day interactions that suck, I assume. But otherwise, you know, I mean, you know, it says in the damn Bible that you leave your mother and father's house and you go with someone else and you form your own house. So that's what life is about. It's not about staying the same person you were when you were being raised by your parents. It's about forming something new with someone else. So if people are trying to, you know, give you an ultimatum, I would go with, you know, go do your own thing, have your own kids, have your own life, would be my suggestion. But mostly it's just people sort it out. Who cares?
Matt, how does housing assistance and or public housing in Nordic welfare state models differ from the U.S.? I know Finland the best and a little bit Norway. In Finland, they have a public housing developer that is public. Okay. So, like, it's not a contracted out thing. In Helsinki, I think something like a third of the housing units are social housing. Let me see. 1% of housing units in Helsinki are public social housing. You can actually go to their website and see all their 20%. You can go to their social housing website and, like, see all the stuff that's for rent, which is kind of cool. And you could, like, ostensibly it's like a rental website. But I would say, I mean, the way I would characterize the model, which is not purely correct, but I think helps get a sense of, like, a different way of thinking about it, is we want to distinguish between the production of housing units and providing subsidy to certain classes of renters. These are different things. And they don't necessarily need to be connected to one another. It is important to have a public housing developer who develops socially owned housing, I think, in part because I don't think the market is going to produce enough units typically. And it's good to have a thumb on the scale in favor of more units, additional units, right? Supply, 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 even when maybe private developers might pull back because they don't think that there's a good enough return, right? To be able to push beyond that, I think is useful. And to have a public owner of the housing, I think is useful. The public owner of the housing is able to get those land rents and repurpose those for social purposes. So there's like a Georgist land value tax component to it. But basically, right, you can have some amount of units that are publicly owned, publicly produced. And then on the flip side, rather than tying particular units to particular income levels, which is a thing that we do a lot here with, like, inclusionary zoning and stuff like that, where you have these set asides and, like, those units are only for people with incomes below this and that. The other model is to say, we don't want to cross these streams. We don't want to say that if your income's below a certain level, you can only go to these kinds of units, and that if your income's above that level, like, we don't want to encourage this sort of income segregation. We definitely don't want a situation where people, their income goes up, and so they have to move or something like that. So instead, why don't we just provide a housing allowance to people with income below a certain level if we want to do that. In Finland, they have a general housing allowance. They also have a student housing allowance. I think they also have an elderly housing allowance. But the general housing allowance is basically just like what we call a negative income tax. You just get a certain chunk of money if your income is below a certain level, and then it phases out at like 30% or whatever. And it's not even administered as a voucher. Like we have Section 8 vouchers where you have to use that voucher on housing, which then has to be a Section 8 approved housing. It's not even that. They just put the money in your bank account. And if you are like really fucked up and you consistently don't pay your rent, like there is like a paternalist backstop to it, where if you're like, you're not paying for your rent and shit, the government will come in and like directly pay the landlord instead of putting in your account. But like, but for the most part, if you're like a normal functioning person, they just give you money and say, go pay rent. And then they develop public housing on the other end of it. So pretty simple.
Yeah.
Kind of set up. Beep, beep, beep. What was the best date you ever went on together and the worst?
We really didn't go on dates from the very beginning. It was like you would be home from college and we would spend all of spring break together, or you would have a long weekend and we'd spend the whole weekend together. But because of that, it was spending time. It wasn't just like, let's go to dinner and then, you know, I'll see you later this week. It wasn't like that. It was never like that. So
we were long distance.
Long distance for a while. We went on that really sad date in Cambridge where it was Thanksgiving and you were visiting me and they didn't have anything that even kind of seemed like Thanksgiving food. I got duck.
I had some sausage. I thought it was fine. I mean, but you lived there. To me, I was like on vacation. I was like, this is fucking cool. It's an old building.
Yeah. It was a bad time. But we've had some good times as well. So,
you know, take the good with the bad.
You take the good with the bad. I don't know. I'm trying to think of specific dates. I can't.
I heard a clip on NPR that social wealth funds primarily help countries that are already rich, and what they ultimately do is increase the wealth gap between rich and poor countries. Does Matt have a response to this? I'm pro-SWF and usually anti-NPR, but these seem like a worthy critique. This is fucking ridiculous. Utterly wrong. First off, there are 80 sovereign wealth funds in the world, including many third world countries. One of my favorite examples of a sovereign wealth fund is the Malaysian Sovereign Wealth Fund, which they used in what is called the Don Raid to take over a British plantation company that owned a bunch of land in Malaysia because it was a publicly traded company. So they went into the London Stock Exchange one morning, purchased 51% of this company with their sovereign wealth fund, and then were like, we run this bitch now. And that they like repatriated a lot of their land that way, not through war, not through military, just by strategic use of the sovereign wealth fund. You know, it's just a collective pool of capital. That's all it is. Now, if you want to say, well, countries that have more wealth can have bigger funds, I mean, that's true. But like small countries, poor countries, they can also pool capital. And it's actually a good way for countries that are developing, if they're careful about it and you don't have corruption issues and whatever, to overcome the fact that they don't have a lot of deep pools of capital in their country. This happened in Finland when they were developing. One of the reasons why there's such a high level of state ownership in Finland is that they were a late developing, poor, marginal country, right on the edges of Europe. They didn't have, you know, I don't know, you think of like a Rockefeller or whatever, or in Sweden, there was a family that owned like 40% of the stock market for so long. They didn't have this family or group of families that just had all this massive wealth so that they could, you know, invest in capital intensive projects and be this like patient donor and whatever. And so the only way to do that in a country like that where you don't have anyone with like significant wealth is to try to pool wealth so that the state can then function as that entity. That's a very effective way to have like a big capital investor to like invent, to sort of construct a big capital investor in your country. Rich, poor, doesn't matter. So a lot of the social wealth funds have been developed due to finding resources, right? So you find a resource like a mineral that's going to run out. And if you're a smart country, what you'll do is you'll say, well, look, these gas deposits are going to run out. These copper deposits are going to run out. these coal deposits are going to run out. So what we're going to do is we're going to develop this stuff. We're going to mine it. We're going to sell it. But rather than use the revenue from that immediately, we're going to use it to capitalize a fund that we can then generate returns forever. That's what Norway did with its fund. China has done something similar. That's happened in many U.S. states as well. North Dakota did something similar to that. The Texas public land grant, like colleges function like that, like the Texas Permanent Fund. Is that what it's called? Anyways. And that fund, by the way, was created in like the 1800s or something, where Texas was not a rich state in the modern sense, right? There would be third world country levels, right? So it's just a matter of, do you want to do it and do you choose to do it? Do you have the sophistication to do it? Any country can do it. And there are unique reasons why a developing country might want to do it, that even go beyond what a wealthy country could do. So, as with anything, it's sort of like people want to associate these kind of tools with like much broader arguments that don't make sense. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, well, I don't know. Would it be like saying building housing? That sounds really great, but that's really kind of something rich nations do. It's like, well, I mean, rich nations do build like more and nicer housing, but is that the case that a poor nation couldn't and shouldn't? I think they should build them if they can, you know, manage to get the resources together to do it. So.
Liz, do you have a theory of depression, either your own or in general? Why does therapy work for some people but not for others? And is this a function of the reason they're depressed? I don't really think that there's sadness, which, you know, is usually a cause and effect thing. Depression is... it's just really a whole different thing than sadness. I mean, you feel sad often when you're depressed, but depression is more of it's the wolf. It stalks you. It's always there, just out of frame, and it's waiting for you to catch its attention somehow. These jags of mood seem to attract it almost, and then it drags you off. Becoming less depressed is interesting. You feel like you're sort of regaining a bunch of your faculties. So in some sense, you sort of have been dead. You see colors in a different way. Objects are more distinct, yada, yada. I don't know why therapy works for some people and not others. I assume that there's some chemical basis to depression, which is why mine has always responded best to medical interventions. But there must be depression that is not responsive to medication. And, you know, one would hope in those cases therapy is helpful, but perhaps not. And they're really just the most damned people.
Matt, I can imagine your version of socialism being called state capitalism by Maoist dorks, etc. How do you respond to that accusation? How is your solution different? I love this question because I actually wrote a whole piece on this, I think, a while ago. Let me see if I can find it. People's Policy Project. I think it was called Identifying Socialist Institutions and Socialist Countries. And then there was a piece I wrote before that, I think. Yes. So the problem here is, and this is something that people deal with all the time, that I've dealt with my whole life, you know, and that is that, let me see. Okay, here we go. Yeah, this argument was presented directly to me. I had this like 6-piece exchange with a couple of different people who are writing in Jacobin, then I would write a response and then they would write a response. So if you want the piece that the final piece, which includes links to the other 4 pieces, or other 5 pieces, maybe. Yes, 5 pieces. So 6 pieces in total. Go to Identifying Socialist Institutions and Socialist Countries at People's Policy Project. I link all the other 5 pieces and then I finish it off there. But in piece number 4, I think it was, we get this. from, I think it was, yeah, so it was Matthew Desan and Michael McCarthy, writing in response to me. Socialism aims to socialize that power. Capitalists shouldn't be able to hold that power and impact all of society. But socialists don't just want to replace private ownership with state ownership. In the same way, we don't believe that capitalists should be able to have disproportionate control over economic resources, we don't think unaccountable state officials and bureaucrats should have the power to control investment and production through socialism from above. In some cases, like the former Soviet Union, the failings of such a system are nearly as deep as those of capitalism itself. The core aim of socialism is not just the state gaining control of industry, but empowering the broad masses of people in their workplaces, in their communities, in their homes, in their schools, in their politics to be in the driver's seat of society. And then you go on further and you're like, okay, so what's your alternative then if you don't want to use the state? This democratization could be achieved through a number of concrete institutions, grassroots state planning agencies, workers' cooperatives, participatory boards. But what is essential is that the people have real, not just formal, democratic control over society's wealth. Right? So this is, I'd say, a very classic bit of rhetoric. And the way it goes is this. You present some kind of form of socialism. And whatever perform you do, a person comes to you and says, that is not socialism. Socialism is when the masses are controlled, or masses are in control. And it could be anything you propose, right? So, for example, he says worker co-ops and participatory boards. I could say, those are not socialism. Socialism is when the masses are controlled. Are in control. A state planning agency is not the masses. A worker co-op is not the masses. It requires the elections of officers and leaders who make day-to-day decisions from above. And don't even get me started on how few people are in the participatory boards. Anyways, what this critique does is it recognizes that in our current system, there is a group of people, a relatively small group of people who own an outsized share of the wealth, and therefore they have an outsized control, a massive amount of control over how capital is allocated, and they receive a massive share of the national income each year, the share that goes to capital, right? So they recognize that that exists. There is this sort of group of people who make capital allocation decisions and who also receive capital income. And then if you present any kind of alternative and you say, oh, this is the socialist alternative, it still remains the case that you have people who do capital allocation and you have people who receive capital income. That still remains the case. And so you just identify who those people are, what those institutions look like, and you go, there's the capitalists. You've just recreated the capitalists, right? So in a worker co-op world, you would go, wait a minute, I thought we were getting rid of capitalism. You didn't get rid of capitalism. The real capitalists are the people who were elected to lead the co-op. Those are now the capitalists. They're just like the shareholders and the board from before. Those are now the capitalists. Or if it's the state, you go, wait a minute, all you've done is replaced Elon Musk with Elon Musk. No, all you've done is replaced, you know, these rich capitalists with the state. Now the state is the capital allocator. That's still capitalism. And it's like, well, yes, there's capital allocation in every system. Socialism is not going to have capital allocation? Then how's it going to work? Who's going to decide what kind of factories we have? What kind of investments? No one? The key to socialism is that what makes a socialist institution socialist is that that institution is democratic. It's accountable to the people. They vote for it. You know, we could get into the edges of how democratic exactly does it need to be, but that is the key, right? So if the state is genuinely democratically elected and genuinely democratically accountable, then the state can be an institution, can be a capital owner that is socialistic, right? It can be. It could also not be, right? Because if you have a state that is dictatorial and is not democratically controlled, then now you don't have socialism, right? There could be other institutions that work like this as well. The worker co-op works like this. If a worker co-op is genuinely democratically controlled and its workers vote for the leaders and whatever, okay, now we have a democratic institution, right? A socialist way of allocating institutions. So, you know, state capitalism is socialism if the state is representative of the people. That's how it works. That's what makes it socialism, in my view.
Yeah.
I don't see what the alternative view is. Because again, everyone who says that's not it, and then you say, what's your alternative? They give you some other institution that basically looks like a state. It's some kind of democratic entity where some kind of board or co-op or whatever makes capital allocation decisions. People get together and vote for some leaders that make capital allocation. It's the same thing. Whether it's in a co-op, a school board, what the fuck ever. The structure is the same. I have a YouTube video on this called, what was it called?
Oh, I don't.
I'll find it here. Using Corporate Governance to Understand Socialism, 2 years ago on YouTube. Just search for that. Good video.
One reason given against marrying early is that one needs to be purged of neuroticism and insecurity via personal growth that follows failed relationships. I'm not sure if it actually works like that a lot of the time, but do you think there's some validity there? My feeling is that waiting to be fully happy and sane before starting to love might take a while. Yeah, I think no one is ever, to my knowledge, purged of their neuroticism and insecurity. Those are lifelong companions.
Except me.
At least in my case. Yeah, you're not neurotic. But even you have areas where you question your competency.
That's true.
So we're all a little insecure. I have a hard time thinking of what it would be like to get into a relationship that was supposed to fail, because it's only there to affect personal growth. So what is your attitude towards it? Your attitude can't be, this is going to turn into a marriage, because you've determined you need to have some relationships fail first. So you hook up with the guy and you're like, all right, time to run this shit into the ground. I need to learn some things. Or do you have to believe it's going to work, knowing it's going to fail? This is a bit confusing to me. I think you should, find ways of growing with someone rather than growing and then trying to hook up. This is one man's opinion. Anyway, I got to go upstairs.
Okay. I'll keep answering questions.
All right, cool.
Because I'm here for you guys.
Yeah.
The listener.
Sorry.
Please comment. I know, that's why I wear a jacket. Please comment on Chris Paul's recent disqualification from NBA Skills Challenge. I did do that. Actually, we are kind of running through the questions here. Beepity boop. I went on a trip with my guy friends and their girlfriends recently. None of them have kids. I've never been on one of these trips. Going on guys' trip. What the fuck is that? It seems normal, though. I seem like I'm out of touch. Am I out of touch? I don't know. I've never been invited on one of these trips. It's never occurred to me to want to do a trip like that. Anyways. We're in our late 20s, early 30s. The women started discussing the pressure of having kids due to the biological clock, and how much pressure society puts on you to have kids at our age. I think people, both men and women, need to take this much more seriously, as my wife and I have, if they want to have a family. But I stayed out of the convo. I get the sense that men don't think about this enough. What is the best way to talk about it? I think about it a lot. I wrote a paper called The Family Fun Pack. The best way to talk about it is to not talk about it. I take the same strategy you do. I'm now 36, so I know people certainly in their early 30s of various genders, if you will. And, it seems like a touchy subject. The thing is, as you observed at your own trip, everyone already knows the deal. Right. So what am I I think they know. I don't know. I feel like people know. People realize, right? Like, well, let's see, if you want to have two kids, you know, starting getting to late 30s, it gets a little dodgy. So let's run the clock back. If I want to have two kids and I want them to be spaced 2 years apart, probably last, you know, I mean, you know, you can push it. Some people have kids at 40. Some people have kids at like 42. But for the most part, you probably want to have your last kid around, I don't know, 38, maybe. So then you're going to need your first kid at 35, which means, you know, pregnant about 34. If you're trying to do the whole marriage thing before that, then, you know, I'm going to try to get that going around 32, 33 at the latest. Right? People know that, I think. How could you not? Don't do some basic math, right? So I just stay out of that shit. You know, if someone wanted to talk to me about it, I would, but you'd be surprised how few people do. How long should you be with someone before getting engaged/married? Is time a factor? Or is this the wrong question? This got to be Liz questions. Is it more contingent on the sort of things you're talking about and the way you choose to spend time together? What is the case for marriage, especially sacramental marriage? Also for Matt, can you just expound generally on the way marriage and the welfare state interact? I'll just do the for Matt part. Ideally, the ideal welfare state is constructed in a way that is agnostic to marriage, where marriage makes no difference in what kind of benefits you receive. And this is a good thing, because not because we need to like not because it's like we don't care if you get married or not. You know, it's totally fine if you want to be like, oh, we as a society, we think marriage is a good institution, and we want to encourage people to do it. But when you make the benefits you receive contingent on your marital situation, which happens in a lot of different ways, including with means tests and income tests and wealth tests, then you just wind up in a lot of really fucked up situations, which often penalize marriage, right? More often than not, when you don't individualize the welfare benefit, and instead you make the welfare benefit apply to a family, and you start looking at family income, then you actually make it to where the main thing that occurs is that when people get married, they lose benefits, right? Because their income then gets combined, and with their combined income, that might put them over some kind of eligibility threshold, and now they lose their Medicaid, or they lose their food stamps, or they lose the EITC, or whatever, right? That's not good, right? You don't want people sitting there being like, okay, so I can either stay unmarried and live with this person and receive, you know, food stamps and Medicaid, or I can get married and my economic situation is going to get a lot worse. We don't want that calculation. On the flip side, we also don't want people's economic situation to get a lot worse if they get unmarried or divorce, right? Divorce can be a very difficult thing. We don't want people to feel coerced inside of a marriage. We don't coerce people into marriage economically, and we don't want to coerce people to remain in marriage economically, right? We might want to encourage them culturally to, you know, tie the knot, and to try to stay that way and persevere through difficulties and all that. We might want to do that, but we don't want to say, hey, if you get divorced, you're going to be poor. It's a kind of form of like financial control and abuse. And you know, I there was a great speech I heard from, I think it was a Swedish, it was the Swedish prime minister for a time. I forget what his name was. And he was saying, look, you know, we're all for marriage and family, but we want people to enter into marriage, you know, willfully and freely, and not because they are economically forced to do that, and to stay within families in general. We want that. We promote that. We want to encourage that to the greatest extent, but we want people to do so willfully, not because they feel like they're economically forced to. So what this all means, not to go on too long, is you want to make welfare benefits individualized, based as much as you can on the person's individual status, not their family status, not how much money their partner makes, none of that shit. Just let's look at you as an individual. What is your situation? And whatever that situation is, your personal situation with respect to the economy, that's what we want to base your benefits on, right? If you're unemployed, here's an unemployment check. I don't care if your spouse makes $1 million a year. You are unemployed, you get an unemployment check, right? And the reason for that is because, well, if you say you can't have an unemployment check if you're unemployed just because your spouse has a bunch of money, well, now that person, what if they needed to split, you know? Or what if they were unemployed and then they were, you know, I mean, $1 million is a lot, but like, let's say their spouse made $100,000 or something. Well, now I'm unemployed. If I get married, I'm going to lose my unemployment benefits. That's not good. We don't want that either, right? Oh, I'm disabled. Do you get a disability benefit? I don't care if your spouse makes $1 million a year. The kids get the child benefits. I don't care how much money their parents make, right? That's how you want to set it up. Unfortunately, we don't have anything like that. So much of how much benefit you can receive is dependent on your spouse and their situation. This has happened so many times in my family. It's really quite a depressing thing. But it happened most recently with my grandparents. My grandmother, who's in her 80s, she's going through it. You know, she's in a position where she had a stroke and she's having like dementia-related issues. And they were really looking to try to get her into kind of like an assisted living situation because her husband is still alive, but he's also like really old and, you know, he's not really, may not be cut out to be like a real caregiver in that setting. And, you know, they're low income people. My whole family is. And they were looking, okay, well, can we get Medicaid, like a Medicaid nursing home type situation? And she did some like informal child care and home care, stuff like that. But she didn't really, you know, she didn't accumulate Social Security credits or a pension or whatever. She was like a stay-at-home parent type situation. So she doesn't really have any income, or they don't even really have much in the way of assets, frankly, but she certainly does not personally have much assets. But he gets something like $5,000 a month from a combination of Social Security and like a pension that he had. He was a vending machine repairman. And back in the day, the vending machine repair company that he was involved in did have like a pension. And because of that, she can't get the Medicaid nursing home care. And that's not how you want to do things, my opinion. Because, of course, if they weren't married, then she could. I guess that's kind of it. How do you have fun with each other so many years into your relationship? What do you do as a couple when you have kids? We don't. We podcast. No, I mean, you know, we both have just kind of intellectual interests and hobbies. And they all kind of fit together well. I mean, it's an interesting setup. I mean, we work together because we both work from home, but, you know, we're working, so we're kind of fixated on that. I do a lot of the kids' stuff, so I take them out on weekends and afternoons and take them to do all the sports and all that kind of stuff. And so oftentimes we're kind of away from each other when I'm doing that. But, you know, we have our own friends. We do our own things. You know, it's just, yeah, like it's just it all works out pretty well, it seems like, because we're pretty chill and have good conversations and stuff like that. But I don't really do a whole lot, you know, just chill in the house. And then, you know, I don't mean to, after a while, like, what's, you know, you just kind of living your life. I guess you don't really think about like doing real momentous type stuff. You kind of just you get into a comfortable groove, and you know, if anything, it's kind of like a lot of what you do is you watch the kids, so I can go hang out with you know this person. Okay, cool, and then vice versa. You know, like that's something you do for someone, but. Trying to enjoy yourself as a couple while you're doing stuff with like a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old, that's a fucking losing game right there. So we don't really do that. I'm nearly 30 and I've never been in a relationship. Am I cooked? Will I be miserably out of depth if it ever does happen? Now, this person is named Jalen, which is usually a male name. It seems to me, as someone who's out of the game, that, well, the manosphere is real into like, oh, no, the dynamic really switches when you get in your 30s as a man because women get more desperate. And I wouldn't put it quite like that. It seems like a mean way to put it. But I think there does seem to be a bit of a kernel of truth to the issue of like a mismatching of numbers, at least in like metropolitan areas. Like if you're in New York City or Washington, D.C., where I used to live, the number of kind of eligible, you know, nice ladies, if you will, seems to outnumber. It seems to be vastly higher than the number of similarly situated men. Now I'm thinking about sort of like professional class, whatever, you know, maybe I think the dynamic might be different when you're thinking like working class types, but in the sort of like professional class dating strata, as you get into your 30s, it just seems like the gender ratio is really in your favor as a man. So you know, I would, you know, I would, I don't say find hope in that, like, because you don't want to think like, well, it's great, people will be desperate. But, you know, I don't think it's as hopeless as you might think. Someone had an interesting question. No, I can't find it. In an alternate reality where you never met, but somehow ended up being more or less the person you are today, how would you go about trying to find someone? It's a funny question because I have no idea what the actual reality is. I just went on a long little answer to question as if I do, but the statistics suggest that everyone just meets on apps. So isn't that just the game? It seems like people have a lot of bad experiences on apps, but surely that's just kind of like, well, yeah, of course, like as a percentage, like, but you only need, you know, if 1% of the people you interact with on there are like good and pan out, that's good. That's good numbers, right? Because there's thousands of them. It just seems like a really sucky process. But I'm talking out my ass here because what do I know? But that seems like what you do, right? You get on a fucking app, right? It's how everyone meets these days, according to the surveys. Matt, have you read any machine learning papers like the Transformers one you mentioned last ep? Is that something you'd ever get into as a hobby? Too old for new hobbies. Not enough time. No, I mean, I don't think I could ever get into this stuff on like a deep level, like a level where it's like, oh, I could toy around with like writing some half-assed. There's no way. I am very interested in using them as tools. And for that reason, I've like, you know, I try to understand as much as like what's going on as I can, as is needed for that. But I'm very much a user of these things more than anything else. I'm well past my prime of being like a teenage Linux autist, where I'm like trying to, how does this kernel driver work? I'm done with that. Okay, I guess that's pretty much it. Hour 24. More content. So I do want to do that episode with Jared, the Crowder situation. I've had a pretty productive week. I'm trying to bang out some stuff, so maybe that'll be part of having a productive week next week. Though the kids are out of school tomorrow, so that's going to kill some of my work hours. But I'm going to try to commit verbally here and therefore force myself to record an episode with Jared, which seemed like could be very interesting. So adios, mofo.